Hi, I'm Rolando Gomez. Originally born in San Antonio, Texas, I've lived and worked in 45 countries, and I owe part of that to being a U.S. Army soldier for almost 9 years. But I'm not going to get into my bio. You can find that on my website or Wikipedia. Many of my fans often say, "I wish I had your life," and my usual response is, "Until you find out how many people have tried to take the life out of me." I remember once at one of my photography workshops in the Outer Banks of North Carolina, as I taught a photographer, Shane, about lighting, we took a photo of the same model with the same camera settings, same focal lengths on the lenses, same lighting source, standing side by side. The only difference is Shane had a Nikon and I had a Canon, but both of us had 85mm lenses attached to those camera bodies, and everything was set at the same on our cameras down to the lens aperture. But Shane felt that my photo looked better than his, and he didn't understand why. I jokingly told him it was because I had a Canon, but honestly, that wasn't the difference. I thought about it for a while, then told him, "It's my life, the life I've lived. I funneled it into my photography. In every one of my photos, there's a piece of me in there. It's there." He looked at me puzzled at first, so I told him a little bit about my story, my life, hoping he'd understand how I view people, life, and liberty, the things I've dealt with, good and bad. In the end, I think he discovered how I funnel everything through my lens. But what I didn't tell him, I also funnel all that life through my writings. So here is some of what I shared with him. I grew up in a family where an "I love you" was rare, and I've endured racism from the day of my birth. I didn't really understand it until my brother Israel's arm was dislocated as he defended our surname while we walked home from elementary school that day. I married young, and shortly after my second daughter was born, I was divorced from my predominantly Irish wife, again, mainly to racism. The same day, to ensure medical insurance and the support of my children, I enlisted in the Army. After my basic training at Fort Knox, my new ex-wife and I decided to secretly remarry. It was a perfect plan. With military orders to Germany, we'd finally leave racism behind us. There were just a few things we had to accomplish for the plan to succeed. First, she'd have to obtain the marriage license before I returned home while I completed my military advanced initial training. She did. Second, she'd arrange for a justice of the peace to marry us. And I needed a friend that could witness a ceremony to validate our marriage license. She did, we did, he did. Third, after we remarried, upon my arrival to my new duty station in Germany, I'd have to extend my tour so my again wife and our kids could join me in Germany. I completed my training in Fort Knox, went home that next day, and while I don't remember the JP's name, he showed up on time along with my good friend Richard Clark. The ceremony lasted maybe 2 minutes. There was no time for vows, much less a honeymoon. It was a done deal, married again. The next day I was off to Germany, and once I arrived, I showed proof of the marriage to my commander, and he allowed me to change my tour from 2 years unaccompanied to 3 years accompanied. All went as planned. You guessed it, her parents saw the marriage license in the local weekly paper under the public notices, and there we were, divorced again, thanks to racism. Her and the children, now with State Department issued military dependent passports, never made it to Germany, and the Army said, "Too bad, so sad, can't change your tour back, you're stuck, private." Ironically, I was assigned to the 3rd Battalion, 8th Infantry Division, Headquarters Company Unit, where all of us enlisted soldiers took the brunt of a battle between our first sergeant of color and the Caucasian Battalion Motor Sergeant. You guessed it, plain as black and white, racism at its finest, and the troops suffered. Morale was extremely low. 18 months later, I got lucky and was assigned to the Army's 5th Corps Headquarters in Frankfurt. There I'd become the personal photographer to the new Corps Commander, Lieutenant General George A. Jowen. The following year, he earned his 4-star and moved to Panama as the new Commander-in-Chief, United States Southern Command. I went from Germany to Desert Storm, but the deployment was shortened after General Jowen did a by-name request that I be reassigned directly to him in Central America. I left Saudi Arabia straight to Germany, and 2 days later I arrived in Panama City, Panama, where I'd get to eat ceviche for the first time. The next 26 months at U.S. Southcom, I'd focus on our primary missions, including Operation Support Justice, a.k.a. the Latin American Drug War, during the Pablo Escobar era, plus monitoring the Shining Path guerrillas. I'd meet ambassadors and other VIPs to include the President, George H.W. Bush, and his wife Barbara, Carol Hallett, the U.S. Customs Commissioner at the time, Judge Robert Bonner, the Administrator of the DEA, General Colin Powell, or Chairman Joint Chiefs of Staff, which I actually had met in Germany, not just Panama, and then the new drug czar, former Florida Governor Bob Martinez, and many other dignitaries. At U.S. Southcom, on a routine basis, I'd work with the various three-letter federal agencies, like the CIA, DEA, NSA, DIA, FBI, and others like U.S. Marshals, and even the RSOs, or Regional Security Officers at the U.S. Embassies, in the collection of intelligence while in the jungles of South and Central America. By the way, the RSOs are usually a member of one of those three-letter agencies. We also had contact and interaction with assigned members of the U.S. Army's Delta and Special Forces, too. Whether it was collecting intelligence on the Tupac Amaru Revolutionary Movement, otherwise known as the MRTA, or the Shining Path Gorillas, otherwise known as Sendero Luminoso, or Pablo Escobar, or other narcos, or visit up to the Upper Huaygaya River Valley, including DEA operations at the base of Santa Lucia, Peru, we often joked about the monthly danger pay stipend of $150. Yep, put your neck out on the line for $150. It was fun times, it was scary at times, and it was dangerous at times. I saw a lot of crazy things, from an entire family digging for food in trash cans in Honduras to survive, and despicable human rights abuses in El Salvador and Guatemala. We even had a plan to meet in Chile with the biggest human rights violator and former dictator, Augusto José Ramón Pinochet. General Pinochet executed 3,095 people, interned up to 80,000 others, and tortured about 30,000 by his regime, including women and children. The meeting failed after General Pinochet snubbed us. The one meeting that did impress me was the personal thank you I received from President George H.W. Bush at the Panamanian President's Palace for my service, followed by the presentation from General Jowen of the Department of Defense Meritorious Service Medal for my actions, something rare for a buck sergeant to receive. Besides a medal in a box, I also received a certificate to hang on the wall. The average person only sees a piece of paper. I can't completely tell you what I see because there are a lot of things I can't talk or write about, especially classified operations. But trust me when I say illicit drugs are the world's greatest source of blood money. The narco world is a perpetual dark economy, often filled with death, torture, harm, abuse, corruption, and the lack of respect for the beauty in life. If you or someone you know does illicit drugs, there's a great chance you've indirectly contributed to some family's griefs. After my Latin American tour that included some missions with the True Patriot and Future Whistleblower in the horrifying House of Death case, DEA Special Agent Sandy Gonzalez, I was assigned to public affairs with the Army and Air Force Hometown News Service, where I'd run the pictorial branch. During that period, still an active duty soldier, I deployed on many missions to include the genocide in Rwanda, where I documented the beginning of Operation Support Hope. They say you never forget the smell of death. I say multiply that by the thousands in one day. And no, you never forget the smell of death, and I never left Rwanda. Later, I was deployed to the invasion of Haiti, Operation Uphold Democracy. There were other operations I'd covered too, but those three operations, Support Justice, Support Hope, and Uphold Democracy, are the three that have instilled darkness in my life that as a writer and a photographer I draw from. Oops, almost forgot. A fourth mission, but not an operation, was when I went all the way to Hanoi, Vietnam in 1995 and returned back to the U.S. with 10 sets of remains as part of documenting Joint Task Force full accounting. We had two long flights on an Air Force C-141 where we stared at the flag-draped coffins from Hanoi to Anderson Air Force Base in Guam. Then we arrived at Hickam Air Force Base in Hawaii. A long, silent ride times two. There were some great missions, too. When the people of East Berlin crossed into West Germany in 1989, as the Berlin Wall fell, it was exciting and made me feel great to help people while stationed in Germany. Eventually, I moved to the Air Force News Agency side of the building, where in the newly created position, I became the agency's first chief of the multimedia branch. There, I'd ensure the daily radio and television programs, plus photos for the Air Force website, were maintained. Somewhere during that period, I'd do model portfolios on my off time, earn my four-year degree, and eventually opened up a website that led to four photography how-to book contracts on photographing women. With that success, plus my photography workshop tour to promote my books, I left government service as a GS-12, including 17 years of eligibility toward a guaranteed government retirement, a decision I sometimes regret. With the new fame of photographing women combined with growing up in a family that never expressed love, racism, and throwing some PTSD, yeah, I made some poor decisions, not to mention I'm a victim of parental alienation. While I can't take back my mistakes, I plan to share them in my upcoming memoir book in hopes, through my musings, that other people don't make the same mistakes. I also hope to show others some root causes of the darkness that life hands us at times so people can also understand why we do the things we do, right or wrong, plus the beauty in life. Some people say I do this with everything I write or capture in a frame through my camera. I'd say they're right. I heal through my writing and photography so that not all is lost, and my upcoming book, Lens Diaries, a memoir, I hope will help others to avert the unnecessary pains of life. Perhaps after some of my fans have read Lens Diaries, they probably won't say, I wish I had your life, and instead they will say, unbelievable. But believe it, it did happen. And with that, I'd like to thank my God, who's allowed me to take this visual journey of life, plus my family and all the muses, models, assistants, sponsors, colleagues, and my mentor, professional photographer and author, Robert Farber. It's all of you who have allowed me to reach another level as a visual scribe. And I leave you with what Ernest Hemingway once said, in order to write about life, first you must live it.